Radio Prague News. The Christian Democratic Party leadership has decided to back party leader Jiří Čunek, who is accused of corruption. Prague Castle Administration and the Catholic Church have failed to agree on the handover of St. Vitus Cathedral from the church to the state. And Jiří Menzel's new film, I Served the King of England, has become a box office hit in the Czech Republic. The Christian Democratic Party leadership has thrown its full weight behind party leader Jiří Čunek, who is suspected of corruption. Mr. Čunek, who serves as local development minister, deputy prime minister and senator, has refused to resign from his post despite the growing scandal surrounding his past activities in regional politics. The police suspect Mr. Čunek of having accepted a £500,000 bribe from a private company while he was still mayor of Szczecin. The key witness in the case is his former secretary, who is under police protection after three men allegedly attempted to bribe her to change her testimony in Mr. Čunek's favor. Calls for his resignation have intensified, but Mr. Čunek says he sees no reason to comply. Prague Castle Administration and Catholic Church dignitaries on Tuesday failed to agree on the handover of St. Vitus Cathedral back into state hands. The church was expected to relinquish its rights to the cathedral after the Supreme Court overturned a ruling by the Prague City Court last June, which gave the church ownership rights. Cardinal Miloslav Vlk argued, however, that the Supreme Court had not specifically ordered a transfer, merely invalidated all former rulings on the case. The cardinal said he did not consider this verdict final and was considering taking the battle to a European court. Another round of talks is to be held on Friday. Health Minister Tomáš Julínek has sacked the directors of three big faculty hospitals, Thomayerova and Vinohradská in Prague, and the faculty hospital in Olomouc. The minister cited poor financial management, and the health ministry said it would issue a detailed report in the coming hours. Former Health Minister David Rath of the opposition Social Democrats has meanwhile issued a statement accusing his successor of having launched a political purge. Jiří Menzel's new film, I Served the King of England, has become a box office hit in the Czech Republic. The Association of Film Distributors says that since its premiere in January, it has been seen by 600,000 viewers, making 67 million crowns. I Served the King of England is the Oscar-winning director's sixth adaptation of works by Bohumil Hrabal. It was voted Film of the Year at the Czech Lion Awards this weekend, where it picked up four prizes, and it recently won the International Federation of Film Critics Award at the Berlinale 2007 Film Festival. And finally, a quick look at the weather. The next few days are expected to be partly cloudy with sunny intervals and afternoon highs reaching 15 degrees Celsius. I'm Daniela Lazarová, and that's the end of the news.
Hello, this is Radio Prague and I'm Ian Willoughby. Today, Prague won't block efforts to revive the EU constitution, the Czech Prime Minister tells Brussels. A new group says we want rockets, not radars, but are they serious? A major cleanup at Prague's Olšanské cemetery. And later, the hotels market in the Czech Republic goes upmarket. That's in this week's Talking Point. Please stay with us. The Czech Prime Minister Mirek Topolánek promised in Brussels on Tuesday that his country would not block talks on reviving a constitution for the European Union. Germany, which currently holds the rotating presidency of the EU, wants to get a new constitution approved in time for the next round of elections to the European Parliament. That's in 2009. The Germans certainly have their work cut out. Countries such as the Czech Republic, Poland and Britain are not keen on reviving the project, which was torpedoed by French and Dutch voters in 2005. Zuzana Kasáková is from the European policy think tank Europium. We asked her whether she believed the constitution could be revived.
It's a really difficult question. You know, that current text required a lot of work to approve it. So I really cannot imagine how now the European governments or their representatives come and discuss something new and they have to find some more consensus on that. It really depends on the political will.
Because on Monday, the Czech Prime Minister, Mirek Topolánek, said in Brussels that he promised not to block the European constitution, but he did warn that negotiations on it could drag on because his coalition here in the Czech Republic may need time to debate a compromise. Mm. What do you think he was really saying underneath that?
I think they want to probably gain some time, because it's rather difficult to get a compromise here. You know, that at first the ODS, or Civic Democratic Party, discussed this and they were agreed on that there should be a completely new document without any references to the current one. And now we see that the government agreed the basis would be the current document and we discuss it.
Mr. Topolánek's party, the Civic Democrats, they've teamed up with Britain's Conservatives to form this new anti-integrationist bloc within the European Parliament. What chance do you think they have of slowing down integration or deeper integration of the EU?
Do you think this is an anti-Europeanist movement? I think it's a movement for European reform. Yes, they want to slow down some kind of integration, but on the other hand, they want to liberalize it more. You know, that the European Union to be more competitive to the rest of the world. For example, the India and China is their main argument for that. And I think that the European Union should be more competitive. And the European Commission thinks that too, because of the revised Lisbon strategy. But there is the other states in the European Union that they claim that the European Constitution, the European Union, should be more social. Yes, this is also true, that it's, the European Union has to pay attention to the social cohesion and social inequality, social exclusion things. But I think that it has to be hand in hand with the economic competitiveness.
Mr. Topolánek also said that talks on a constitution might be faster if the EU governments agreed on a sort of slimmed-down version of the treaty, a kind of EU constitution light, if you will. Do you think there might be some truth in that?
Yes, I think so. If we have some more simplified document, which is really not very detailed, I think it would be clear for everyone when you have more simplified document or really easy readable and understandable to all. It's, of course, I think, better for EU governments and EU politicians and officials to agree on and also to communicate it to the people.
Easier to sell to the people.
Yeah, it's easier to sell, of course, yeah.
My colleague Rob Cameron was talking there to Zuzana Kasakova of the think tank Europium. Now, there has been a great deal of talk in the last couple of months about US plans to build part of its anti-missile defence shield, a radar, here in the Czech Republic. Prime Minister Mirek Topolánek welcomes the idea, though the Czech government has yet to reach a decision on the issue. In the meantime, there have been a number of demonstrations against the radar base. Now, however, a new civic group has emerged with the title My chceme rakety, ne radary. We want rockets, not radars. Is this some practical joke, or are they serious? That's a question I put to spokesman Martin Koras.
We mean it seriously, of course, but we decided to exaggerate a bit, because it seems to us that the debate on the radar base is too emotional, it's desperate. People are over-concerned with the technical details. What concerns us is the principle. We want politicians to inform people what it will really mean.
According to the website of We Want Rockets, Not Radars, the Czech Republic needs to bear its share of responsibility for international security. Some might say, though, that the country is already doing so, with membership of NATO and participation in military operations in Iraq and Afghanistan.
I don't say that it doesn't, but if someone calls us,
I'm not saying that isn't enough, but if someone calls on us for help, I'm in favour of acting. I think the Czech Republic has behaved surprisingly responsibly towards its partners in recent years. Now the Americans have asked us to host this radar base, and I trust that Czech politicians and politicians in Europe and the US will discuss what is a reasonable issue.
One of the reasons some Czechs give for not supporting the building of a US radar base is that it could make the Czech Republic a bigger target for terrorists. Prime Minister Topolánek says that, on the contrary, it will make the country safer. What's the position of We Want Rockets, Not Radars? Spokesman Martin Kotas.
Well, I think if you're talking about us being a target, we had a foreign army here, the Soviet army, after 1968, and I think we're being much more provocative by our participation in Iraq, in Kosovo, in Afghanistan, which, by the way, I'm in favour of. It's a far greater provocation when our army is on foreign soil than when a foreign radar is on our soil.
And that was Martin Kotas of the civic group We Want Rockets, Not Radars, who, by the way, are holding a demonstration on that issue in Prague next Monday. Prague's Olšanské Cemetery is by far the largest graveyard in the city. It's the final resting place of over a million people, including many of the leading figures of the Czech National Revival and scholars and artists. You can also find there the graves of Czech legionnaires from the First World War, as well as Commonwealth and Russian soldiers who lost their lives on Czechoslovak territory during the Second World War. However, the graveyard is often the target of vandals, and some of the oldest parts of Olšanské Cemetery are in very bad repair. But thanks to the efforts of a handful of volunteers, the old cemetery is slowly becoming an attractive place for visitors, who can learn more about the stories behind the graveyards. Pavla Horakova has more.
Surrounded by busy thoroughfares from all sides, the Olšanské Cemetery is never a quiet place, although on a weekday morning like today it is nearly deserted. The older parts, close to the metro station Flora, are sometimes a painful sight. Among the greenery, sandstone tombs, a couple of centuries old, are nearly falling apart, their roofs caved in. Some of them have their doorways bricked up to stop unwanted guests from using them as toilets or places to sleep. But in the oldest part of the cemetery, the view is a little more optimistic. The eye is attracted by small white tablets scattered among the graves, with photos and texts paying tribute to some of the long departed. That's the work of Roman Catholic priest Miloš Sabo and his parishioners from the nearby district of Žižkov.
I started discovering the history of the place partly because I perform funerals there. I can see how quickly the gravestones get damaged, bits of them stolen, and so on. I couldn't look at it anymore. I first inquired with the authorities what can be done, but then I thought, what can I myself do? I had this idea that a history trail could lead through the graveyard with signs telling the visitor which notable people are buried here. Anyone would be able to find the particular grave and pay their respects to the dead. Or, for example, professional groups such as mathematicians, physicists and philosophers could find their great predecessors. Or teachers could tell their pupils about famous writers.
The first dead were buried in Olšany in 1680 during a plague. A chapel now outside the cemetery commemorates the epidemic. In 1787, Emperor Joseph II made Olšany the central cemetery for Prague. Located outside the city walls, it was a safer burial place than the old graveyards in an already overcrowded city. Father Miloš Sabo is now rediscovering the history with a group of enthusiasts, in their free time and without any subsidies.
It's very demanding work because it involves examining every single grave, crawling through the thicket, cutting off the ivy, finding out who's buried there. Then I need to find out who the person was, look them up in the archives or in encyclopedias, take photos of the grave, write it all down, have the proofreading done, produce the actual sign, and finally place it there. With the approval of the cemetery authority, this trail is gradually expanding. Now we have the first sector covered, the second is nearing completion, and I'm already working on the third sector of the cemetery.
Dokončují se druhé Olšanské hřbitovy a já už pracuji na třetích Olšanských hřbitovech.
On an area of 50 hectares, the Olšanské cemetery has been described as an open-air museum and gallery. Yet it is difficult to navigate, and often you come across the important graves by chance. That is now changing, thanks to Father Sabo and his parishioners. The poor state of the gravestones and tombs is another matter. But as I was walking through the cemetery, I noticed at least three teams of workers putting up new roofs and plaster on some of the old tombs.
Now, in the final part of our program today, Jan Wellinger looks at developments on the hotels market in the Czech Republic in this edition of Talking Point.
A recent headline in the Czech newspaper Mladá Fronta Dnes put it succinctly, more hotels than streets, indicating the number of hotels in Prague 1. Shortly afterwards, numbers released by the Czech Statistical Office confirmed that the number of guests staying in hotels in 2006, especially 4- or 5-star establishments, went up year on year. In short, there is now more demand for luxury hotels in the Czech capital than ever. Despite this fact, a shortage of luxury establishments exists. Prague alone has almost 500 hotels, but real estate agencies and market analysts indicate there are still market opportunities for investors to open 4- and 5-star establishments. Some are expected to pour millions into new hotels on the Czech market over the next 3 years. Tomio Okamura of the Czech Association of Tourist Agencies explains that even conservative foreign investors are now being attracted precisely because of the market potential and the fact that other important criteria from the 90s were met.
If new tourist destination is discovered, there is still everywhere around the world few same steps. First coming groups. It means that clients don't feel this destination as safe, as well known, so they pay always for the guide and for the tour leaders and so on. And there is not individual clients. So it was situation to maybe 1995, 1996, 1997. Then this numbers of the groups became still less and there is more individual clients. And the destination where is more individual clients than groups, it is safe, well-known destination. So in Prague, for example, because Prague is number 6 in the Europe regarding number of tourists, now is 75% individual clients. It is barometer how people feel or think about Czech Republic as destination. It is reconfirming of the fact that it is safe for investment.
Until now, a good share of the Prague market was made up of 3-star hotels with relatively fewer 5-star establishments. 26 2 years ago, while there were 89 4-star hotels. Now the number stands at 29 and 100 respectively, and in the next 2 years it is expected to increase even more. Pavel Hlinka is the president of the Czech Association of Hotels and Restaurants.
I have to say that the growth is really big. I have to say that every year minimum 2,000, 3,000 new rooms are coming on the Prague market. And that's why we can say that now in Prague we have more than 10 times more rooms than before the revolution. And at the same time it's important to say that in the past there were only some inter hotels, but now there are generally without Hyatt and Sheraton, every hotel chain is situated in Prague.
One direction some new investors are taking is investing in small or medium-sized boutique hotels, 4 or 5-star establishments which often present a more original setting or personal touch. Tourism specialist Tomio Okamura again.
For a smaller hotel in the old town, I think the situation will be fine, still good. Because individual clients very often choose smaller hotels. They want to feel as they get individual service. Very often each room is a little different. Each room has some different furniture or some different facility. They can choose from the variation of the interesting room. So I know tens of these types of very nice hotels. Because number of individual clients is still increasing, I think that these small boutique hotels with some interesting facility, some quite different atmosphere, yeah, that they have future, and I think very long future.
Mr. Okamura suggests that exquisitely renovated and furnished historic buildings with around 20 rooms are typical for this kind of project, but stresses that there is a world of difference and investment, for example, between 3 and 4 stars. Any hotel in the luxury category must meet the highest international standards. In terms of style, not all such establishments, however, go the Baroque or Classicist route. By way of example, one of the boutique hotels in the city is the Hotel Joseph, a functionalist building where owners took a minimalist approach. The building was redesigned inside and out by architect Eva Jirichna. Not antiques, but contemporary and crisp design, glass and shades of white. Hotel Joseph's Milena Findes.
You can see it in the details, if it's design or not. It doesn't happen so often that the architect and the interior design is the same person, but we had the luck. I remember quite well one of the first conversation I had with Eva Jirichna, because we have here a lot of white. But the reason, for example, is if you are coming to Prague, your eyes are so obsessed because you see such a lot of different types of architecture. And so you need also for recovery this kind of silence which gives you new energy. It's difficult to describe, but you can feel it because there is a harmony.
Hotel Joseph is one approach, but it is clear investors will be weighing others based on location, history, their target customers, and style. According to the Czech Association of Hotels and Restaurants Pavel Hlinka, ultimately with even more competition looming on the Czech market, it will be the customer who will benefit. On the other hand, some of the smaller, non-luxury hotels may find themselves struggling.
When we are speaking about the rates, it's one especially for the 3 and 2-star hotel. Especially in the low season, the life is very tough. Because the 5-4-star hotels are going down with the rates. They are using the rates of the 3-star hotels, and immediately the 3-star hotels, if they would like to sell something, they have to go down with the rates too. So, and sometimes I'm afraid that for them it's nightmare during the winter time to keep the business really to be successful.
The influx of more luxury rooms may present more of a threat for cheaper hotels. Perhaps not. But this much is clear. Most investment, say specialists including Tomio Okamura, will be aimed at Prague. In his view, it is still a major unsolved problem to get investors to put money into projects outside the capital, unless there is first a large improvement in infrastructure, as well as the promise of government-backed incentives, and a low tax rate. While there are cases where foreign investors have renovated old chateaux and turned them into exclusive hotels, many, like Pavel Hlinka and Tomio Okamura, think there are exceptions, and they do not think the Czech Republic will see all that massive investment into the more rural parts of the country just yet. Tomio Okamura again.
In the future, yes, but not this year or next year. I think that not also after 3 years. Last year, Czech Republic was visited by 6.5 million of the foreign tourists. 57.5% of these tourists visited only Prague. And 80% of the income from the tourist industry, from the foreign tourist, was done only by Prague. 111.5 billion crowns. So it means that there is very, very big difference between Prague and the rest of the Czech Republic.
Attracting new investment into the regions must now be a number one priority, 17 years after the revolution, says Mr. Okamura. If the Czech Republic is to attract a substantially higher number of repeat visitors beyond the Czech capital.
That edition of Talking Point by Jan Wellinger brings us to the end of today's program here on Radio Prague. Everything you've heard in this show can also be found online at www.radio.cz. There you'll find an extensive archive of reports and features in both text and audio form. You can also sign up for a free news email and use our podcasting. If you feel like commenting on anything you've heard about, or anything you've heard rather, in today's program, or if you've got any questions you'd like to ask us, don't hesitate to get in contact. You can write us a letter to Vinohradska 12, 12099 Prague 2, or send an email, that address english@radio.cz. But for now, from myself, Ian Willoughby, and all of us here at Radio Prague, thank you very much for joining us, goodbye, and take care.